Thank you, Mr. Smith, and good afternoon, everyone. It's always a joy to come up to see everyone here in Akron and Canton. And fortunately, now that you've combined, we can do it in one stop, you know, so that really is good. You know, we look back to the fact that our roots began in Akron. This is where some nearly a half a century ago, my wife and I came to Akron. It was in July, I believe it was, of 1966. And we came and, you know, were ushered in to the place where we thought the ministers were just one tiny step below God. And we wondered, you know, how we could fare in such an atmosphere. But we truly appreciated the fact that we've had all of you brethren are here right now to just enjoy this time with, to learn from, to be helped by, and so on. So that was really good. We came, we had three children, 1 9, 1 8, and 1 4. And we started in July, and Rilla and I were both baptized on Christmas Eve in 1966. So we didn't go home and decorate the tree. Not after that. Well, we look at Akron as the mother church for both Canton and Mansfield, and I certainly do bring you greetings from the Mansfield Church. Both Canton and Mansfield began in, I believe it was July of 1979. So we're in the month of our 32nd anniversary for those two churches, and I think it's probably the 52nd anniversary month for Akron. I'm not exactly sure about that date. There's no doubt that those of us here today have not been led astray following any man that wasn't following Jesus Christ. And I think that's something that we need to, you know, take encouragement in, the fact that, you know, this group is still here. You know, Jude tells us that we should earnestly contend for the faith that was once and for all delivered to the saints. And I think we've truly done that here. We've truly tried to stay, you know, convicted to that faith that God had called us to. And God gave us the truth, and we have not departed from that truth. So we all need to take encouragement from that and to know that, you know, we're here to do God's work, and we're certainly humble servants of His, and we just look to Him to guide us in all the work that we do. We had a lot of good years in Akron. We can remember times in the Spokesman's Club and the various times and the various things that we did in the Northern Building. And that's where my wife and I were baptized, in the Northern Building in downtown Akron. So we do appreciate coming back. We do appreciate all of you who helped steer us on our way back at that time. So I certainly appreciate all of that. Well, it was a beautiful and pleasant evening, and as the sun was beginning to set in the west, and that was on July 3rd of this year, just 27 days ago. The band was playing stirring patriotic music, including the 1812 Overture, and the Ohio Light Brigade of the Civil War reenactors fired the cannons at exactly the right moment to add to the thrill and excitement of the occasion. Rilla and I were at one of our favorite concerts as the Ashland Symphony Orchestra celebrated Independence Day. That was on July 3rd, and it was in the Brookside Park in Ashland at the Myers Bandshell. Well, we celebrated the anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And I doubt if even the signers know that even those signers and many among us even have an idea of the full extent that that particular signing meant a golden dream for mankind. A golden dream was born at that time. A dream that goes far beyond just personal liberty, political freedom. That's what we always celebrate on the 4th of July. But that dream goes beyond that. And God has shown us some things that I think we need to stop and take a look at and understand why some things happened in the Bible many years ago and why this particular dream opened the doors to what we have today. I want to read you a letter that John Adams wrote. He wrote this to his wife on July 3rd, 1776, one day before the signing of the Declaration of Independence. He said, "Yesterday the greatest question was decided which ever was debated in America, and a greater perhaps never was nor will be decided among men. A resolution was passed without one dissenting colony that these united colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, and as such they have and of right ought to have full power to make war, to conclude peace, to establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which other states may rightfully do. You will see in a few days a declaration setting forth the causes which have impelled us to this mighty revolution and the reasons which will justify it in the sight of God and man. A plan of confederation will be taken up in a few days." He said, "You will think me transported with enthusiasm, but I am not. I'm well aware of the toil and the blood and the treasure that it will cost us to maintain this declaration and support and defend those states. Yet through the gloom I can see the rays of ravishing light and glory. I can see that the end is more than worth all the means, and that posterity will triumph in that day's transaction, even although we should regret it, which I trust in God we shall not." So you can see the very serious way that this particular signer of the Declaration of Independence felt about that at that time. And as he said, posterity still celebrates that particular day. The signers pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their honor to make this dream come true. Many of them lost their lives, and others lost their fortunes. Among them was a wealthy relative of mine named Robert Morse. My father told us that he was directly descended from this ancestor. But in doing research on our family tree, my daughter Linda could not conclusively prove the link because some papers were destroyed in a courthouse fire. However, when we look at the picture of Robert Morse, it looks exactly like my dad. So in any case, he was no doubt a relative because he came from the same area in Wales as my father's ancestors. I mention his case because we know more about it having done research on it, about him and what had happened to him over the ages here. In history, Robert Morse is known as the financier of the Revolution. He came to America alone at the age of 14, and he got a job in the mercantile trade. And soon he became a partner with the owner, and together they had a fleet of 150 ships. He amassed a fortune and at one time considered buying the entire state of Pennsylvania. Well, when the Revolutionary War broke out, or when it began, actually even before it began, he continually risked his life because he was the head of a secret committee to bring arms and ammunition to America and to finance the revolution. He gave his entire fortune and borrowed money in his name to finance the revolution, after which he spent a long time in debtor's prison because he couldn't pay it back. Well, the other 55 signers each also played heroic roles and selfless roles in giving America her liberty. The Golden Dream was born for America on July 4, 1776, but it would require incredible devotion, sacrifice, vigilance, and just plain endurance to keep it alive. Sadly, it is in jeopardy today because of debt and political bungling, but that is a subject for another time. Few in history understand the full significance of this golden dream and its importance to the future of all mankind. If you want a title for this message, it is The Golden Dream, Liberty with Creativity Set Free. Liberty with Creativity Set Free. We always emphasize the liberty that was conceived and expressed in the Declaration of Independence. But today, let's go deeper and look at creativity set free. We will see an awesome step forward in God's plan for mankind as it unfolds right before our eyes. Let's briefly review what life was like throughout history under the feudal and monarchical governments of the past. And feudal, I mean F-E-U-D-A-L. Kings and emperors, dictators, ruled with the dukes and the so-called nobility, and the serfs and the peasants were ruled with an iron hand and consigned to all the manual labor of a routine nature. Anyone born into this lower class had nothing to look forward to except hard work out there in the fields, tilling the crops, harvesting the crops, and all this, the various things that it took to take care of the nobility and to take their little portion that they would be allotted for their living. They were to live out their lives in the class in which they were born. The man with the hoe, you may remember that from high school literature, the man with the hoe was a poem written by Edwin Markham, and it depicted the life of the man who had to toil in the fields all his life. I want to read something to you here, the excerpts from The Man with the Hoe, where it says, "Bowed by the weight of centuries, he leans upon his hoe and gazes on the ground. The emptiness of ages is in his face, and on his back the burden of the world. Who made him dead to rapture and despair? A thing that grieves not and never hopes. Stolid and stunned, a brother to the ox." In other words, saying that he was as numb as an ox who was out there with all the ox's labor going on. "Who loosened and let down this brutal jaw? Whose was the hand that slanted back the brow? Whose breath blew out the light within his brain? Is this the thing the Lord God made and gave to have dominion over sea and land? To trace the stars and search the heavens for power? To feel the passion of eternity? Is this the dream he dreamed who shaped the suns and marked their ways upon the ancient deep? There is no shape more terrible than this. more tongued with cries against the world's blind greed, more filled with signs and portents of the soul, more packed with danger to the universe. You see, the rich did nothing except enjoy the pleasures of the rich, and the serfs serving in what they called serfdom was consigned to do all the work so that the rich could enjoy all of theirs, things that they wanted to do. He goes on to say, what gulfs between him and the seraphim? Think about the seraphim at the very throne of God, and this creature created in God's image down here, stooped with a hoe in his hand, trying to feed the world. He said, what gulfs between him and the seraphim, a slave of the wheel of labor? What to him are Plato and the swing of the Pleiades? He's not interested in philosophy, not interested in what the stars are doing above him, you see. What the long reaches of the peaks of song? In other words, can't enjoy good music. The rift of dawn or the reddening of the rose, the things that we look at and appreciate. He just kind of goes on in his numb way doing his work. Through this dread shape the suffering ages look. Time's tragedy is in its aching stoop. Through this dread, or plundered and profane, disinherited, he cries protest to the powers that made the world, a protest that is also a prophecy. And then he appeals in his poem to the masters. And he says, oh, masters, lords, and rulers in all lands, is this the handiwork you give to God? This monstrous thing distorted and soul-quenched? How will you ever straighten up this shape, touch it with immortality? Give back the upward looking and the light. Rebuild it. Rebuild in it the music and the dream. Make right the immemorial infamies. You see, he was expressing the plight of those who were consigned to slave away all of their lives, working there, not really being human, but being just like animals on the earth. This was what life was like throughout history under this type of government. Anyone born in this lower class were expected to do the tilling of the soil, the planting, the harvesting of crops, the cleaning of the stables, and all the mundane chores, and then to get up the next day and work at it all over again. The ruling class spent their time enjoying all the pleasures of the rich, and these two lifestyles filled a majority of 6,000 years of man upon the earth. Why was that? Why did that take place? Well, let's turn. I think this will give us some insight here that I hadn't really realized until just recently. Turn back to Genesis 11. Genesis 11. And we'll pick it up in verse 1. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And then they said to one another, come and let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come and let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Now, we don't know, we're not told, whether they, in this group of people, were anticipating going to heaven, you know, taking a shortcut to get to heaven or not. And verse 4, a tower whose top is in the heavens, let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they have one language, And this is what they begin to do. Now notice this statement. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. I pondered that for years, what that meant and why it was stated this way. So God said, come and let us go down there and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Why did God do that? Ever ask yourself that question? Why was it bad for all the earth to be of one language and able to go ahead and do things and one man build on another man's idea and so on? Well, there's a reason for that. It may not meet the eye right at this point. But you see, God knew if they were free to do the things that they were beginning to do, that they would reach, in a period of a few short years, they would reach a point where they would be approaching, the close at the end of the age is what we're approaching right now. So God confused the language. He wanted billions more people to be, born, and so that they could have a chance and opportunity in his kingdom. He wanted billions more. And that's why over the 6,000 years, we have more and more people. But God did not, when he scattered them abroad, he did not set up their governments. You don't see that found anywhere. He left the people do the setting up of their own governments. And in any case, when mankind does that, you have a level who become the rulers, the rich, and so on, and they begin to oppress the rest of the citizens of whatever nation that is. And so for 6,000 years, creativity was stymied. 6,000 years, creativity was stymied. Prior to this time that we're talking about here, with the signing of the Declaration of Independence, prior to this time, there was very little progress made in the tools and techniques of agriculture. They would sow the grain, till the ground, with maybe an ox and a crude plow, sow the grain by hand. As we talk about the sower who went forth to sow seed and so on. Then they would, with a cradle, they would reap the grain. It's like a scythe with wooden arms on it that hold the grain so that the heads are always up. And then they would tie the sheaves and take them to the threshing floor, and then they would winnow the grain out of the sheaves themselves. So think about the travel. Travel hadn't progressed up until this time, the time of the Declaration of Independence, beyond horse carriages and ships that sailed on the sea at the mercy of the wind. Transportation, of course, was very limited. Communication was, a lot of times, even back in David's day, it was a runner who went out to the battle and brought back word to David, and then he'd go back taking a message out to the captains in the battlefield. So communication and industry had not progressed at all. But then, with the signing of the Declaration of Independence, we see that not only did people receive individual liberty, but their creativity was set free. Their creativity was set free. They weren't required to work, you know, for the ruling class, beat down and subjected and so on, so that each person was free to do what he chose to do. And he could have a little farm, or he could work at something else, or he could work at whatever he wanted to try in his innovative thinking. So from 1776, immediately in 1778, interchangeable manufacturing was introduced. And Eli Whitney is credited for that. In other words, if you're going to make a gun, you didn't have to hand make it and hand craft that gun, and nothing else would fit. You couldn't get a firing pin from another gun, it wouldn't fit in your gun, because they were all handcrafted. But then they started making production parts that were interchangeable. They all measured the same, so a firing pin from this gun would fit any other gun. And so this was the lead-in to the progress, which would eventually become production line manufacturing. Then in 1793, Eli Whitney also invented a cotton gin for the ease of manufacturing clothing and so on. By 1807, Robert Fulton had invented a steamboat and had one operating on the Hudson River. In 1832, Cyrus McCormick invented the reaper for the harvesting of grain. Then in 1847, Thomas Edison was born. And with his innovative mind, the rest is history. I mean, of all the things that he invented, he held 1,093 things for which he had held patents for. 1,093 different things. Charles Withington invented the hay baler in 1872. And it's said that he saw every detail of that in a dream. So we're given a hint here that God was helping these people with their innovations and their creativity. He saw it in a dream, and when he woke up, he went about putting that all into a machine that would be called the hay baler. In 1903, the Wright brothers showed the world how to fly. And that same year, Henry Ford began mass producing automobiles. I want to read you, in looking at these various things, I want to read you what is said about Thomas Edison. It said he led no armies into battle. He conquered no countries. He enslaved no peoples. Nonetheless, he exerted a degree of power, the magnitude of which no warrior ever dreamed. His name still commands respect as sweeping in scope and as worldwide as that of any other mortal. A devotion rooted deep in human gratitude and untainted by the bias that is often associated with race, color, politics, and religion. In other words, the power that Thomas Edison released in his inventions was more power than any warrior would have ever dreamed. Thomas Edison himself said, "Be courageous. Whatever setbacks America has encountered, it has always emerged as a stronger and more prosperous nation. Be brave as your fathers before you. Have faith and go forward." That's his statement. Well, Thomas Edison invented, of course, electric light, for which he's probably best known. But he also invented the power plant and a means of transporting electricity from one place to another. And this is probably the one invention that's had the greatest effect on the world, where our homes could be heated and lighted and so on, and where industry could run and have the power to operate all the machines that are required in manufacturing. Then, of course, as we look beyond here, the turn of the century, of course, we had the telegraph was invented, and then radio and television, and then, of course, the computer world burst on the scene with all of its variations of communications. Today, the United States issues, now think about this, United States issues approximately 80,000 patents a year. 80,000 patents a year of things that no one else have thought about. Why wasn't all this done in other countries centuries ago? Well, human creativity was held captive, you see, and finally released at the Declaration of Independence. Let's go back and read that statement again in Genesis 11 and verse 6, where God said, "Indeed, the people are one and they have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them." That sounds kind of far out, doesn't it? Nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Do you know what July 20th, this past July 20th, what that date was? That was the 42nd anniversary of our landing a man on the moon. Now that statement doesn't sound quite so far out, does it? 42 years ago, we landed a man on the moon. That's 193 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, after a total stalemate of approximately 6,000 years. So do you see that? Do you catch the vision of how this creativity sprung forth? Because people had individual liberty. And you know what? God said that he made man in our image. And he said, let us make man in our image. Well, God is a creator. And so, mankind was also made in that image, where he could create. Well, since landing a man on the moon, we have sent land rovers to Mars to analyze the terrain, plus several deep space probes to look at the backside, the dark side of the planets in our solar system, and even to go on out into space. And we put the Hubble telescope in space like a giant periscope up through the atmosphere so that we could look at the vast reaches of the universe. Brethren, these are gigantic steps forward. On the small side, we have decoded the DNA with all its 3.1 billion bits of secret life codes. All this apparently was God's plan from that time back there in Genesis, but he wanted to delay it to allow billions more to be born upon the earth and eventually have a chance to be in his kingdom. The timing wasn't right back then, and so it was sealed until the time of the end, so to speak. And mankind achieved all this that we've discussed in 235 years after nearly 6,000 years of stalemate. All these inventions and discoveries and the increase of knowledge is absolutely incredible. They reveal man's creativity, which is good, and we reap all the benefits, the very great goodness that we've been able to enjoy in this nation and around the world. And you know, these inventors were not people from far away. Like they say, an expert has to be from 500 miles away before anybody will believe him. They weren't from far away. Thomas Edison was born right here in Ohio. The Wright brothers right here in Ohio. So they're all around us. And, you know, these other inventions, Eli Whitney and a group, were right up in the Northeast. So in this small area that we're privileged to live in, these inventors took place and changed the world, literally. Now, let's turn over to Daniel. Book of Daniel. I love the 12th chapter of Daniel because there God gives us insight into what's going to take place in the future, and as he told Daniel. You know, Daniel was a man that was greatly beloved in God's eyes, but God didn't tell him the details, but he did outline him. He gave him a synopsis of what was going to take place in the end times. Daniel 12, and we'll pick it up in verse 1. So, we will see things here revealed that open, you know, our eyes to see what is going on in other parts of the Bible, as God gave him this little synopsis here. At that time, Michael shall stand up. Oh, Michael shall stand up. The great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. So now we see that Michael is the archangel assigned to Israel, don't we? And there shall be a time of trouble. Okay, there's a time of trouble coming. Daniel knew this. Such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time your people shall be delivered. Look how God in 13 verses tells Daniel all the things that are going to take place here. Your people shall be delivered. Brethren, that's talking about us. This was 2,500 years ago when God was outlining this for Daniel. So we have the hope of being delivered because we have stayed true to that faith that we talked about. Everyone who is found written in the book. And sometime when I come back, we'll take a look at God's book of life. That's a very interesting thing to trace that out. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life. So there's the resurrection, you see. And some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those that go into the lake of fire. Those, now notice this, because it's speaking of everyone sitting here today, if we stay true to God. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. That should give us a thrill right up our spine when we read that. Those who are wise. Now, how can we become wise? Well, we became wise because God chose to give us his truth. And then what we had to do was accept that truth and live by that truth and not let any man lead us astray, you see. And that's what this group has done. How many times and how many opportunities have we had to go astray and to turn away and follow some man with some of his ideas that are not according to the word? Brethren, we do not follow a man who does not follow Christ. We need to keep that in mind always. How many times over the years, the past 45 years that we're aware of, and I know some of you were here that helped us get to know the truth and how to live by it. How many times have we had the opportunity to turn our back on God's law and walk away in 1995? And then more recently to walk away and say, well, we're not really doing the work of God. We're going to do something else, whatever that is. I don't know what that is. But brethren, you didn't. You stayed true. And you, if you continue to stay true, will shine like the brightness of the firmament. And those who turn many to righteousness. What did you hear during the announcements? You heard about the Beyond Today program? Your pastor is down in Cincinnati today making or giving a sermon that's going to be on Beyond Tomorrow or Beyond Today. And I think it's going to be the 7th of August. So, we're trying to turn many to righteousness. That's what the Kingdom of God seminars are about. We have a part to do that, in doing that. And it's your help, your support, that does these various things. And you will shine like the stars of heaven forever and ever. Now notice God told Daniel all this, and then he said, but you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Well, is that right? Are many running to and fro? Everybody from the jet set that, you know, zoom around the world from one place to another, to the soccer mom who runs 40, 50 miles a day or more, taking your kids back and forth. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Do you realize Daniel didn't know how knowledge would be increased? He didn't know how many would run to and fro. Okay. And then he goes on over here to say in verse 9, and he said, pick it up in verse 8. Although I heard, this is Daniel, although I heard, I did not understand. Then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed. Words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Verse 13. But you go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will arise to your inheritance at the end of days. These are profound things that are in your Bible. Profound things. Has Daniel been waiting for 2,500, looking through Daniel's eyes, has Daniel been waiting for 2,500 years and thinking, oh, is it ever going to end? Is it ever going to change? No, Daniel died and went to the grave. And when you die and go to the grave, that's a shortcut to the kingdom for that person. It's a shortcut. Daniel died and went to the grave. In the next second of his consciousness, he will be awake in the resurrection. So, you know, sometimes we mourn over people who die and certainly leaves a hole in our life, and we're just torn apart by that. But for that individual who died, it's a shortcut to the kingdom. He'll be there in the next second of his life, the next second of his consciousness. And that's what happened to Daniel here. So Daniel will be astounded to see these things when he is resurrected. So these things, things of this human creativity, the inventions, the discoveries, and so on, they produce enormous good, and we and the entire world benefit. You know, think about the electric power that we've got right here. We all benefit from those creativities of the human mind. But you know, back in Genesis 3, humankind chose the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so with everything that man does, there is the good side and the evil side. So there's a downside to all of these. There's a mix of good and evil in everything that man does. You know, we know how to make nuclear weapons. So we make them and hope that we'll never have to use them. And other weapons of mass destruction. When I was in the Air Force, it was during the Cold War. And we were assigned on a B-36 aircraft. We carried a 3-megaton bomb. And we were assigned to a certain city in Russia. So that if we ever got the word that Russia was attacking the United States, we had the fleet of aircraft to go across the North Pole into Russia to each major city in Russia with a 3-megaton bomb. A bomb that would blow a hole, a crater in the earth, a half mile deep, 3 miles in diameter. And everything within that circle was vaporized in the fireball. It was vaporized and it didn't exist anymore. Going out from the center of that was a 600 mile an hour shock wave of winds rushing out from the center. And then the center became a vacuum, so we had 400 mile an hour reverse shock wave come in. And you can imagine, you know what a 200 mile an hour tornado does. You can imagine what that would do to anything in a city. So mankind does, you know, tremendous good with his inventions, but he also has that shade of evil always there. We also genetically modify our foodstuffs and so on, because you see, we've decoded the DNA, as we mentioned. We decoded the DNA, so now we can start tinkering with the very elements of life itself. Now, scientists are mixing human genes with animal genes and creating new creatures and new experiences, which could be monstrous in their results. Monstrous. I want to read you just briefly some things about that. This article is entitled "Genetic Modification Gone Wild: 10 Signs That Our World May Be Destined to Resemble a Really Bad Science Fiction Movie." And it goes through here. I won't read the details. Excuse me. But there are 10 things that they've done with genetic modifications. In China, they've inserted human genes into dairy cattle. And in doing that, they can produce milk that's exactly like human breast milk. And they hope to have it in the grocery stores in the next few years. In Canada, in the University of Guelph, in the province of Ontario, they invented something called enviro pigs. In other words, they put mice genes in with the pig genes in the embryos. And they did that because they call them the green pigs, because their manure is not so toxic to the environment. The third thing they've done in Japan, they modified mice that tweak like birds. Then one U.S. corporation can now produce very muscular monster salmon, which can grow up to 3 times as fast as normal. Science can now produce cats that glow in the dark, so you don't need to worry about them getting run over by a car, or at least the driver can see them. In Japan, scientists discovered that they can grow rat organs inside of mice. The researchers hope to use the same technology to grow human organs inside of pigs. In Missouri, entities that are part pig and part human are being grown with the goal of providing organs for human transplant. Another one here is scientists at Rockefeller University have injected human genes into mice. The humanized mice are being used to study how the disease of hepatitis C is spread. The ninth thing here is that scientists can actually grow new human organs from scratch. New human organs from scratch. And believe it or not, a company in Canada has introduced spider goats. Spider goats. They put the genes of spiders into goat genes, and the milk that the goats produce, from that they can make these fibers that are extremely strong, stronger than steel, lightweight, and so on. Absolutely crazy things that are going on here. And here's the worst of all. It says 150 human and human animal hybrids have been grown in UK labs. Imagine animal and human hybrids. Embryos have been produced secretively for the past 3 years. Scientists have created more than 150 human animal hybrid embryos in British laboratories. It says the revelation comes just a day after a committee of scientists warned of a nightmare Planet of the Apes scenario in which work on human-animal creations goes too far. So you can see that along with all the good of these various inventions and innovations comes the bad, the evil that mankind bought into back in Genesis 3. Well, brethren, God knew what he was doing when he created life and all these things that support life. And we need to ask, who is man that he should tamper with it without knowing the end results? You know, we can, as we in this age can look back at all these various things that we've discussed, we have a unique perspective that was not accessible to generations in the past. And we can see much more clearly the hand of God at work in all things. Paul said of his time, "We see through a glass darkly, but you know, for us it's not quite so dark." Not quite so dark. You know, back then they had no idea of how all the world could see the two witnesses when they couldn't even see over the next hill. Think of the faith it would take to believe that all the world could see two witnesses lying on the streets in Jerusalem back then, before they had any of these. It would take tremendous faith to think that, wouldn't it? You'd think, well, maybe God is somehow going to create some miracle with our vision or whatever to make that happen. What do we think today? No big deal. We'll send a news team out there. They'll put it on TV and the whole world will see it, you see. So you see, we've got miracles here right before us that we take for granted quite often. You know, Daniel didn't know how knowledge could be increased or how people would run to and fro. He had no idea of worldwide air travelers, commuters, or even soccer moms, as we said. But what does this mean? Well, for us, it is all the more incumbent upon us to be sure that we're on the right track, because with knowledge comes more responsibility. We have a much greater means of reaching the world with the gospel than anyone at any time in the past. And I'm really thankful that United is making an all-out effort to reach as many as we can with the telecast and then to give them more knowledge in the Kingdom of God seminars. You know, when potential new disciples come to our King of God seminars, we need to greet them with correct knowledge and good examples, just as you people in Akron greeted us when we came in. We truly look back and appreciate your examples. But we need to be brushing up on our Bible study daily and participating in every way that we can. We have been called and given the greatest job, the greatest challenge, and the greatest tools to meet that challenge that has ever been given to mankind. With that challenge comes the greatest reward ever to be given. As we said, God gave Daniel a synopsis of the end time in Daniel 12 and verses 1 through 13. But Daniel had no idea how that was all going to come about. Now let's look at a few verses about that time over in Revelation. Revelation, we're going to look first in Revelation 3 and verse 7. Now keep in mind that those who are wise are going to shine as the stars forever and ever. And to the faithful church, the angel of the church in Philadelphia, write. The title of this thing was The Faithful Church. And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia, write. These things says he who is holy, he who is true, he who has the key of David, he who opens and no one shuts, and shuts and no one opens. How is that? How can that door be open and no one can shut it? Let's read on. I know your works. See, I have set before you an open door and no one can shut it. For you have a little strength and have kept my word, and have not denied my name. Okay. Back in the days of the apostles, you know, you could get up on your orange crate and preach to the people. But what happened many times? They came along, they grabbed a hold of Paul and Silas, they took them to the prison. And if they had an orange crate, they probably threw it away. So they could shut those doors to the people who were trying to preach the gospel back then. So now we have satellite TV. How do you shut that door? Be kind of difficult, wouldn't it? If you had a way of speaking on satellite TV, as we do in Beyond Today programs. Said, I have set before you an open door. No one can shut it. You have a little strength and have kept my word. Brethren, this group right here has kept God's word. We learn the truth and we never let it go. We need to take encouragement in knowing where we are and where we stand right now. Indeed, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan. And who's that? That's all the false religions of the world who say they are Jews and are not, but lie. Indeed, I will make them come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. Now, in the past, we've been embarrassed to say that they're going to worship before our feet. We would go, you know, some would go mealy-mouthed over that. But you look up worship and it's the same word that God tells us to worship Him, the same word. God tells us these things, and it's hard for us to grasp. But when He says it, I believe it's true. Because you have kept the command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world, to test those who dwell upon the earth. Brethren, we're going to be tested. We see that. And we have to remain true and faithful. He said, behold, I come quickly, hold fast what you have, that no one may take your crown. Who's to hold fast? We are. We are to hold fast. He who overcomes, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. In other words, that'll be home base for us, the temple of God. And I will write upon him the name of my God, the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name. Think about that. Wouldn't that be great to have representative of God? You know, whatever your people would give your card out for your address, you have your location is going to be the New Jerusalem, and that will be written right upon, you know, the clothing you wear. You know, in industries we pass out caps and jackets and so on. Our company passes out these things that says Crane Pumps and Systems. And, of course, hoping that people will wear them and the advertisement will go out. We're going to have God's name written on us. And we're going to have the New Jerusalem written on us. And he says to us, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Now, brethren, was there a golden dream really born on that fateful day in July 4, 1776? Look over to Revelation 21. Revelation 21. You know, all the heroes of Hebrews 11 look forward to this. And it says in verse 18 of Revelation 21, and the construction of its wall was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, like clear glass. Pure gold, like clear glass. Verse 21, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. That's the dream, brethren, that was born, and the creativity that was released with the Declaration of Independence in our time. Now look at Revelation 22, verse 12. Here Christ says, and behold, I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me, to give to everyone according to his work. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Blessed are those who do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. Those who do his commandments. Does that mean, oh, well, we can worship one day a week, Sunday or whatever day we choose, when God says to worship on the seventh day? No, it doesn't. Those who do his commandments have that right. But outside are the dogs, the sorcerers, the sexually immoral, the murderers and idolaters, and whoever loves and practices a lie. I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you these things in the churches. I am the root and offspring of David and the bright and morning star. And he already said that we will shine like the stars forever and ever, didn't he? And the Spirit and the bride say, come. Who's the bride? Brethren, that's us. Say, come. What do we say to the people who are Good News subscribers? We say, come. Come to the Kingdom of God seminars, and we'll show you more than what you pick up on the Beyond Today program. And let him who thirsts comes, and whoever desires, let him take of the water of life freely. In other words, come, receive the Holy Spirit, understand the truth, and be like the stars that shine forever and ever. Brethren, these things are exciting, really exciting. Now, you know, we have a chance to exercise our creativity because God has his plans to increase his government forever. Think about that. Not just have his government forever. He plans to increase that government forever and ever. Let's flip back in the last couple of scriptures here and look at Isaiah. We start out in Isaiah 9 and verse 6. Probably all familiar with this, where it says, "For unto us a child is born, and unto us a son is given. And the government will be upon his shoulders, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." And notice verse 7. "Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end." How do you do that? How do you increase that government forever? We can look through the Hubble telescope and see the planets out there in their galaxies and in their orbits, going around and around, waiting to be planted. Waiting to be planted. Now, we will be in the kingdom. We'll have every opportunity to use our creativity. We will be working with those who make it through the tribulation and into the world tomorrow. For 1,000 years, we'll be working with them. And beyond that, then, we'll have the privilege to work with all who ever lived and who come up in the resurrection, the second resurrection. We'll have the opportunity to work with them. And beyond that, we have hints that we will go out into the universe and work there. Turn over to Isaiah 51. Isaiah 51 and verse 16. Very interesting the way God words these things. Isaiah 51 and verse 16, where he says, "I have put my words in your mouth." Think about that. God has given us his words here and put it in our mouths. Now, why did he make that statement here? Well, because we're going to be speaking these words and teaching people. And he says, "I have covered you with the shadow of my hand." What does he say about his people in Malachi 3 and verse 16? We won't turn there. But God says, "You are my special treasure." What do you do if you have a special treasure? Like you have a huge pearl and it's in danger of being lost or stolen. And you have it there in front of you, and people are around who could snatch it. You put your hand over it, don't you? You keep your hand on it. God says, here, "I have covered you with the shadow of my hand, that I may plant," notice that, "the heavens, and lay the foundation of the earth, and say to Zion," that's his church, "You are my people. You are my people." The word "plant" here means exactly the same. It's the same word that was used where it said God planted a garden eastward in Eden. And it's the same word used over and over again talking about planting a vineyard. So God apparently, with this little hint right here, is telling us that we're going to expand out into the universe and plant the universe, so to speak. The planets and all these different things out there. And what he's trying to do is just to kind of pique our imagination so that we can see that goal and make sure that we never give up on that goal. Well, brethren, we've been given the opportunity to be on the right side of history and to show others the way of the golden dream. These are extremely exciting times. Let's rejoice in them, and let's hold on for the ride.